This is the DRF Players Podcast.
It's Wednesday, March 11th. It's the DRF Players Podcast alongside DRF Tournament Editor Peter Thomas Fornital, DRF Formulator Mike Hogan. I'm Matt Bernier. We got the bands back together.
Yeah, it's
first
been a while.
A little while.
Yeah. and basically a one show reunion as I'm leaving for California later today. I've got my hat for California.
I see that. That's good.
Ready to rock and roll out there. So I guess Dan will be sitting in on Friday, but I will appear via the magic of recorded audio.
That's right.
With a special tournament talk interview. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. But hey, at least we're here together to talk about last weekend's races.
You're going to California just when the weather here starts to get reasonable. It's nice.
It is, but I'll say this. You know, there's still lots of snow on the ground. I mean, I've been enjoying actually being able to take the dog for long walks and whatnot the last few days, but there's going to be something to be said for 85 and
sure.
No humidity. I think it's going to be good for the soul. I've picked out some nice Aloha shirts. Going to be hanging out down at Quigley's Corner, hanging out up in Front Runner. If anybody's out at Santa Anita over the weekend, pretty much Thursday through Sunday, I'll be in one of those two places with occasional appearances in the Eddie Logan suite to schmooze with some of the tournament players. But please do come say hi. It's going to be great fun.
So where you're going out is where one of the big races, there's a lot of big races at Santa Anita last weekend. We'll give you a quick little rundown. We're going to go through three of the big stakes. Then we'll have a little bit of tournament talk where you can go into that. Then we'll talk about three-year-olds. One of those three-year-old preps will lead us into the public handicap races, and we'll be out of here. We'll try to keep it to about 45 minutes.
Sounds like a great agenda to me.
Cool. Shared belief. Santa Anita handicap. What else is there to say?
Yeah. Well,
he whistled.
Yeah.
Whistled is the understatement of the century. This is a joke.
Easiest of winners.
And go ahead, bring it up, because I'm going to take it to task for you. No. You said that you listened back to last week, and I had said,
I wasn't here on Friday, so of course I had to listen.
If Shared Belief doesn't win by five, it's a disappointment.
You said at least five, you got to be disappointed. But
it wasn't quite five, according to the official chart now.
So the official chart was four and change?
Four and a quarter, I think.
And I'm not, no hyperbole, he probably could have won by 15.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say 10, but it was amazing to see. You don't often see a horse geared down to that degree at the wire. I mean, this is a horse who gallops out, and basically two strides past the wire, everybody was past him because he'd stopped running 50 yards earlier.
Yeah. For me, it wasn't even the geared down part. It was that Mike Smith never asked him to run.
Yeah,
he shook the reins at him briefly on the far turn, and then once he was clear,
yeah.
I mean, this was the easiest win I can honestly, maybe with the exception of Game On Dude a couple years ago when he won the Peak Classic by about 12, which this horse easily could have done. And then the final time, it was almost 2 minutes flat, and he didn't ask him to run a step.
He could have run, I truly believe,
158?
He could have run a second faster.
I think even faster than that. I mean, think about it. He traveled more ground than all but two horses.
He was ridden as he should have been, like a 1-5 shot.
Right, and I mean, he made 1-5 look like a gift, which is it. Honestly, I would think about that.
Well,
and then you brought up the exotics.
Yeah, so this, you know, I mean, it's so funny. When people see a race like that, they think, oh, we got a free square in a pick four or a pick six or whatever. And that could very well be the case. But this is why I love things like a super, especially in a 13-horse field. If you've got a free square on top, and the $1 exacto to Moreno paid $5. Do you know what the super with the third and fourth choices flipped? So the fourth choice was third, the third choice was fourth. Do you know what the super paid for a buck?
What'd it come back?
$2.15.
Wow.
$2.15.
That's very interesting. I wouldn't have thought that. I mean, that has to be somebody betting a lot of money looking for something crazy to happen and perversely creating a little bit of value with the choices in those lower rungs.
That's where
my head goes.
What my theory is, and it's generally true to a large extent, is a lot of people say if they're playing supers, I can't handicap who's going to run third or fourth, so I'm just going to go all.
Right.
But when you do that, obviously you're guaranteeing you're going to have a large number of losing bets, and I think that's where your value comes in. If you're able to eliminate at least a handful of them, or maybe you go all with one wager, but then you do a $2 or $3 hammer with some of the more logical ones. I mean, if you put it's easy to redboard afterwards. But if you put Shared Belief as first and Moreno as second because you thought that that was just a cold exacta.
Or Key Moreno in the second, third, and fourth. He seemed likely to hang around with a piece, right?
Sure. If you do that, you know, you use two or three underneath. It's a $6 play if you key three horses underneath, you know, for a buck. You could conceivably hit it a few times. I don't know. I love the super. But
it's a cool bet. We don't have time for a long discussion of this, but I just want to throw this out there because people do ask us a lot on Twitter about different wagering strategies. And for me, not a super player, considering actually starting to think about it more, and the type of strategy I'm interested in is almost like a double key, where you have your horse or horses you think are likely to run 1-2, and then you also have horses you think are just – for whatever reason, likely to run third and fourth and not necessarily win, or second, third, and fourth and not necessarily win. And you can build some creative tickets. And, I mean, that just goes to show. If the first four choices there are coming back that sounds like, I mean, you know, not really having handicapped the race that way, but it certainly sounds like a pretty good payout.
Yeah.
Well, and the problem for me is I just know I'm not confident enough playing it, and that's why I don't dabble in it too much right now, just because of what you brought up, that a lot of people just hit all in third and fourth. I'm not confident enough to take a stand with the horse to run fourth.
Usually what I do is what I call kind of the triangle bet, where you'll do, if there's a horse you love to win, you'll key them first, and then you'll do two for second, three for third, four for fourth, and that for a $1 wager costs $8. But the nice thing about the super is you can reduce it down to 10 cents if you want to spread and get more coverage in that fourth slot. You know, I don't usually go all, because part of my handicapping is which is why I love the super, I usually feel strongly about a horse that could win or at least get second, so I weight it accordingly. And then I usually feel strongly about a horse that might be a second or third choice that I think, at least from a value standpoint, I want to play out of hitting the board, because if a second choice doesn't hit the board, that's often when you get paid. Or in a case like this, when you got, you know, a 13 horse field and you got nine of them that are always going to, you know, guaranteed not going to be in the super. So anyway, there's a number of different strategies. We could talk about it on a day when we don't have as much to cover, but,
yeah, definitely. I think wagering is you know, we go into the handicapping so much, and Dan and I have talked about it when we go live, which, by the way, now from now on, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, we are going to be live.
Amazing.
So after we're out of here, Dan and I got to come on 12:30 Wednesday, Thursday, still TBD on Friday, but then 12:30 on Saturdays as well. You know, I've had success with putting certain wagers together, like in live money contests and whatnot, but I know, I mean, if there is one area that needs to improve vastly, it's my actual betting. It's not the handicapping. It's putting together better bets.
Well, and I think that's become a little bit of a focus over here at DRF. I think the series of articles that Lonnie has been writing have been terrific in that they put the emphasis more on more on the betting side of things. Yeah. And hopefully that's something that I'm really looking forward to what you and Dan come up with all the extra hours you're going to be doing video on live, and maybe wagering strategy is one of the things you'll be focusing on a bit as well.
Yeah, and I mean, I still think, you know, it's something that everyone can improve on. You can always try to tweak it a little bit more and get better at it.
Absolutely, so. New bets are coming in, and bets are changing, and it's an ever-evolving ecosystem. And for me, I contend there's a lot of great handicappers out there who are broke. And if you can be a pretty good handicapper and a great bettor, I think you can be in that 1% of players who wins consistently, and you know that's where I want to be.
Yeah, no, I agree with that, because I disagree vehemently with people that think that a good handicapper is one and the same, a good bettor and a good handicapper.
Different
I think they
disciplines.
Are completely different animals.
Yeah,
you
absolutely.
Can be great at breaking down a race, but you can be terrible at putting bets together.
Absolutely. We see it all the time.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, Shared Belief. Can anyone – am I the only one here that doesn't think anyone – I don't think any horse – if this horse gives his B-plus effort, I don't think anyone can run with this horse right now.
I say this not to be a hater, but just as a racing fan, I really want to see him do it out of California. And in the moments after the race, I was chatting online with Jonathan Kinchin and some other friends about where the horse's next placing was going to be. And I was really scared it was going to be a boring California only till the Breeders' Cup campaign, and was thrilled to see them talking very seriously about the Met Mile, which to me would just be as sport unbelievable. Now, he's not going to be 1-5 in there. That's going to be a real test. But boy, I mean, I think when you have a horse this special, you don't learn anything beating up on the same overmatched foes. And being undefeated or whatever, to me, it's an overrated idea. Like, I mean, I get it. If it was my horse, maybe I'd feel differently. But from a sporting point of view, and when I think you have a horse who has the potential to be historically good like this horse, I think you just learn more, and it's just much more fun and sporting to challenge the horse. And to do something like Ship Across the Country for the Met, I mean, I'm not saying I'm going to bet against him, but boy, that's the kind of thing that could be a challenge. If it was a California-only campaign, we know he's already won. Let's move on. So I like that they seem to be wanting to get very ambitious with this horse without being crazy.
I got a couple things to say. One, perhaps it's a little bit along the lines of what you said about being undefeated. It's a little bit of a blessing in disguise, perhaps, what happened in the Breeders' Cup Classic, because now they don't have that weight of...
Well, don't tell my wife that.
Well, you know, as owners or as a horse, there's not the history of, oh, this horse could be undefeated now, and what do we do, and where do we watch where they go next? It does almost take a little bit of the burden off.
No, I know. I'm clowning around. I know what you're saying. They don't have to – it's not like with Zenyatta where clearly they got so wedded to that undefeated streak, and you know, there were some great spots for her to potentially ship that they chose not to.
Right.
It doesn't seem like that's the way this story's going to go, though.
The other thing – and I love it from a sporting standpoint, and of course you got to imagine that the purse is part of the factor, but to me he seems like he's a better horse going two turns, and so now cutting back to a one turn mile and shipping all the way across the country, you know, it's a test for him. And I was talking to Matt and Dan a little bit yesterday. To me, it's a shame, it's an absolute shame that at the Keeneland Spring Meet there are grade ones for older fillies and mares but not for older males. And that would be a fantastic place for him to go. It would be, you know, trying out on the track. They're going to be running the Breeders' Cup this year. It's just a shame that there's not an opportunity for him to run there.
What do you think, Matt, about his chances in the Met Mile should that plan come to fruition?
Well, you said, you know, he won't be 1-5. I don't think he'd be more than 3-5. Even no matter who shows up, and we'll go into another race here in a moment. But, I mean...
I agree. He'll probably be odds on.
I mean, he's going to be short, and I just, right now, I don't, now again, I haven't been paying attention to racing nearly as long as you guys have. I've never seen a horse that I've looked at like this and said, if he's right, I don't think anybody can beat him. I really don't. And you two both, more than anyone, know that I haven't earned this Debbie Downer, you know, title for being Mr. Positive and Mr. Upbeat. If he's right, I don't think anyone can run with him. I really don't. And you know what? We'll see what happens going down the road. I think this year is clearly Horse of the Year is the goal. They want to get that in the whole nine. As a 5-year-old, why couldn't he run on grass? He's shown that he loves the synthetic. I just think this is a horse that, again, knock on wood, he's got to stay healthy. He's got bad feet. That's been well documented. The fact that Hollendorfer and his wife have kept this thing together. I think Jay Privman tweeted something about that Saturday night saying, kudos to them for keeping this horse's feet together. And the fact that they keep going back to Golden Gate. That's where he's based. That's his home. Let him train over the Tapita. It's easier on his feet than it is running down at Santa Anita all the time. I don't think anyone can run with this horse. I don't.
You don't hear me arguing.
No, yep. I never thought I would ever say that. I really never thought I would say that. I mean, I can only imagine this is how people felt about like Secretariat. And I'm not comparing the two because he's not nearly in that category yet. But I've never seen like Zenyatta. Zenyatta was a great horse. They said it Saturday night after the big cap. I don't know. He would never say it publicly. I bet if you went to Mike Smith, and I don't know what he thought about Holy Bull or any of the other good ones he's been on. I bet if you went to Mike Smith and asked him who he thought was better pure talent-wise, I think he would say this horse, Shared Belief.
Wow.
He was on Game On Dude as well. Yeah. I think
he's
this
sat on some great horses. Somebody will ask him that question, of course. We'll see how he handles it.
He actually was, I think, asked that, and he just mentioned the three, Holy Bull, Zenyatta, Shared Belief, in the same category. I don't think he ranked them.
And I don't think he ever would.
I don't think publicly
Privately, I bet you he'd say. And, but, again, that's just me speculating, but... I can only imagine this is what people thought of with the real big horses of you know, you guys. No, you guys are a little bit too young for Secretary, right?
Yeah, I never. I mean, we were extant at the same time, but all of us. But I was too young.
I'm
to
I'm like
appreciate.
The same age as Secretariat, so
I did not appreciate him running at the time. Just subsequently,
right? But I mean, even I'm just trying to think.
Yeah, I mean, I remember Seattle like Cigar. Slough.
Cigar.
Cigar was in my wheelhouse.
You know, I mean, does this kind of horse give off that same vibe? And I know we're riffing on this one a little long, but I mean, the other stuff we can.
This is the good stuff.
This is it, though.
Nobody's
but like,
going to complain if we give anything short shrift to talk about Shared Belief longer.
All right, like you said, Cigar was really what kind of got you into racing.
Yeah, that was right at the time. That streak was a big deal. I didn't have the racing knowledge then. But I mean, I even remember thinking at the time. You know, you just probably from things you pick up from reading Daily Racing Form and whatnot, there were some questions about some of the level of his competition. I mean, if Shared Belief continues to do what if he goes to New York and wins a race like the Met, he's in every conversation about great horses for me. I mean, that I've seen.
It'll be interesting to see what transpires, how the rest of the year unfolds. And
he does
again,
need to do that, though, to get to like that upper level for me.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Beating up on California horses all year isn't going to.
Well, and we talked about it too. I mean, at the very least, if you include the Met, we need to keep in mind and make note that the plan, the word right now is that before the Met, they're going to Oaklawn.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't hear that.
I don't know about that.
That's the plan right now.
Well, so that's what some people have said, but.
Well, we have our guys reporting that, so keep that in mind.
I'm just saying, I heard Hollendorfer on Steve Bick's show on Monday, and he wasn't saying that.
Okay.
So he wasn't saying absolutely not, but he was not.
Be very aware that there's a potential of him going to Oaklawn.
Yeah,
put
sure.
it that way.
Yeah.
So to run in the Oaklawn handicap, which Dan and I both said he'd be assigned what 135 pounds and Carve would be the second at 115. I mean, it'd be something ridiculous.
They're
like
not gonna
that.
Go if that's the worst.
Right. And that's the thing. So but if he does go to the Met, he'll likely run up against a couple horses from the Gulfstream Park Handicap, which was won by Honor Code, who, I mean, I thought he was good. I don't think he ran the best race. I don't think he ran the second best race, to be honest with you.
Really?
He won. I don't think – you. I want to hear what you have to say.
All right, well, let me leave with one last thought on the previous race, which is just I did appreciate the extra little thumb in the eye from the Breeders' Cup Classic, the race I'll never get over. With Moreno running so well also.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know what, that's a good point. I'm glad because I thought Moreno ran a terrific race.
Yeah, but that's neither here nor there. No, I mean, I thought that given what the splits were and given how he broke, I didn't think that was a collapse in the Gulfstream Park Handicap. I just thought Honor Code was unbelievable. I mean, from a pace dynamic point of view, of course, you know, horses who are on the pace typically get some extra credit, but it wasn't some... It didn't come back as a flow that you had to be a closer to win. And it was so against the profile of Gulfstream as a track that I was super duper impressed by Honor Code above all in there.
I won't disagree with that. I mean, for a while, not only was he not on the screen, but the Chicklet wasn't even on the screen.
Dan said it as he and I are sitting here watching it between our little takes on DRF Live. And he goes, was he pulled up?
Yeah.
Because he's off the screen.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And the fact that he broke... slow, he stumbled, and he broke inward.
He broke in, yeah.
And we go, maybe he did get pulled up, I don't know.
And Shug, the Shug quote was amazing. It was so honest. He says, halfway through the race, I'm already thinking up the excuses.
Yeah, I mean, well, and you know, I guess that's the thing. I thought he ran great, and I think all the connections have to be happy with what they got out of it. I think Private Zone ran the best race. A horse that probably doesn't want a mile. He's probably better at 6 or 7. To cut out those splits contested by a horse like Valid, who he's a good horse. He clearly, something's not right when he hangs in that left lead throughout. He still runs bang up races, but something's not right. And again, he's probably a grade two, a grade three. The fact that Private Zone could fend him off and almost hold off the onslaught of the others coming on, I thought he ran the best race. And I think the horse that ran second best race is Wicked Strong.
Wicked Strong. I mean, I guess it depends on the definition of best race. I'll say this. Going forward, I love Wicked Strong.
If I'm taking one horse out of that race, I'm taking Wicked Strong. I'm not taking Honor Code. I'm not taking Private Zone.
Knowing that he was short.
Knowing two turns is what this one wants. Knowing that he probably wants to be closer to the pace than he was in that spot. I thought that was a terrific, terrific performance from him.
Yeah, bunch of horses ran good races, no doubt about it. For me, Honor Code took the cake, but I get what you're saying isn't nuts at all.
I agree, and you know, I think what we're kind of getting at, and sometimes I like to have the discussion of, there's the horse that you'd want to bet in the race, or even in the next race, and there's the horse that you'd want to own. You know what I'm saying? Like we're going to talk about the Swale in a second. I mean, I think there's the horse, if you thought Daredevil was vulnerable off the layoff, clearly he's the horse you'd want to own. He might not be the horse you want to bet. And what I hear you saying is that regardless of how the race worked out, the one that you are, I don't want to say in love with, but really like as a horse is someone like Private Zone and maybe a second Wicked Strong off that.
Yeah, and that's just because I felt like Private Zone, knowing that this was a totally different ballgame from new trainer, new jock, new track, longer distance than he probably wants.
Right.
I know he won the Cigar going a mile, but if I'm thinking older handicap, because Private Zone's a sprinter at heart. I mean, he's a 6'7" for a long sort. If I'm thinking two-turn route, you know, older handicap division, it's Wicked Strong.
Yeah.
I was blown away. I thought it was really, really good. That's not to say Honor Code wasn't, because he got his final quarter in 24-4, I think.
It was unbelievable.
He closed like a freight train. He's a big horse. He galloped out well. They all really, shockingly, galloped out well after setting all those fractions. We said it when we came back on air. I don't think any of the connections can be disappointed with the way that race played out. I just thought it was a really good race all around.
And interesting that Honor Code may be one of the ones lining up. I like this campaign that Shug seems to have in mind for Honor Code, where the Met Mile is an important race for the campaign, but then talking about maybe come Saratoga, doing what he believes the horse really wants to do and stretching out further. I love that we're in a time where we have these horses who are serious grade one threats at a mile and beyond a mile. It's an exciting time to be doing a horse racing podcast.
My only knock on Honor Code, and this is he was really, really good. You can't rely on coming from 400 out of it. You can't.
But I don't think that was by design. I think it had to do with the terrible break.
Every one of his races has been like that, though.
Well, this and the previous were extreme. Before that, he was able to lay close.
Not that close.
They were longer races, though.
I've
actually got the PP here. So, like, the allowance race at Gulfstream, you know, he was second. It was slow, but he was second, you know, a length and a half off. You're thinking of, like, the Champagne, where he was 11 lengths out.
Yeah, I think that's his running style. The Remsen, they got a half in 54 seconds.
Yeah.
That's why he was on the lead. I mean, I think you got a serious problem with this horse. He needs some early speed.
Well, but I think if you're going from a mile, if maybe that's part of why Shug has the campaign in mind that he does. If you go from a mile to a mile and a quarter, you're necessarily going to be that much closer as the distances get longer. It's not like he's going to continue to lag back. And I do believe that how far out of it he was on Saturday was an extreme example. You know, he'd been 10 lengths out of it before. He was more than 10. What wasn't he? How far back was he?
Well, I think that had more to do with the fractions up front for him being so far back.
I didn't think it was crazy fast. You thought that was really fast?
I didn't think it was really fast. I thought it was an honest pace. I mean, they got 45 and 1.
I actually don't have the chart in front of me, but
22 and 4 for the quarter, I think, and 45 and something small for the half. That's my only thought, is that, because I'm looking at his big performances, you know, air quotes, this race, that allowance race at Aqueduct, coming from a million out of it, the Champagne coming from a million out of it, and the Remsen was a farce. That race as a whole, I think, was a joke. You know,
it was potentially false race because of what the fractions
because
were.
Of the fractions. Other than that, I mean,
some pretty good horses came out of it.
Oh yeah, no, I agree with that. I'm not putting that. I just think the running style. Say he goes to the Met. Say Private Zone goes to the Met. Say Shared Belief goes to the Met. I mean, you can't let a horse like Shared Belief. You can't spot him 8 lengths. You got no shot.
It would be very difficult.
You know, I just, that would be my only concern going forward. No. But I agree. I think it's nice that Shug is thinking two turns. That's really what this one's going to want to do.
So I'm looking at the chart right now. At the half, he was 15 lengths back.
And do you have, can you get the his own half mile time?
I don't have that because I don't, yeah, I don't have the formulator with me right now.
I don't think I can get that from the screen that I'm on. But I mean, it was slow. Do you know how to do it from here? Oh, great.
So I will, while you're doing that, I will say that the leaders' times were 23 and 2, 45 and 4, 110 flat.
I mean, for a mile. Sorry if you're hearing me in a little bit of a funky.
We've got Matt is doing the. That's the IT guy now.
I'm trying to, and now we have the spinning clock. Waiting. We need charts. Go to race charts. This is an example of how powerful Formulator is.
Yeah, it's great that we can do that quickly.
We're pulling up.
I didn't
charts.
Realize
We're
you can get those individual splits from the chart. I get them typically from the PPs in Formulator. But that's great that you can
10?
Do them. Yes.
It was. So here we
Sounds
go.
Like we need to do another webinar about all the things.
Yeah.
So the first thing up here is the standard chart, and you can pull down.
Oh, there you go. Incremental pace.
Incremental pace. But I want the elapsed pace of each horse. So Honor Code got his half in 48 and 2. Now, so in the grand scheme of things, maybe it wasn't so much. I'll go back over to my chair. Thank you. Thank you, Mike.
You got it.
In the grand scheme of things, he didn't go that slow. It was just that everyone else was going that much faster. So in that response, in that respect, maybe you're right. Maybe
and remember, he also lost a couple lengths just from the
out
start.
Out of the start, right. So in that respect, maybe if they are going, you know, 9 furlongs going 2 turns, maybe he is closer. It'll be, you know, just something to keep an eye on.
I agree with you. He's going to have to be. So we speed round a couple of races here?
Well, we speed round the Swale. What else is there really to say? Ready for Rye ran really well. Daredevil, I thought, ran a really good race.
He ran terrific. I saw some negativity about the performance on Twitter, and I didn't get it. I mean, his speed figure was terrific. It was a difficult post. He didn't get the greatest trips, and he ran really well. Still not convinced he wants to stretch out from that, but I bet you if Ready for Rye wasn't in the race, there'd be a lot of people calling for him to stretch out based on the figure and the way he theoretically would have won in that alternative universe.
I thought he ran well.
Yeah. I don't have anything else to say.
No. Tournament talk real quick. Want to knock that out?
Absolutely. So the big news this weekend in tournaments, of course, Santa Anita. I'm going to be out there. A lot of other tournament players are going to be out there, folks who qualified on drfqualify.com. You can also buy in. If you're somebody who likes to bet and you're in the area, or maybe get a group of people together if the bankroll is beyond your scope, it's $3,500 for a two-day contest. $1,000 of that is entry fee. $2,500 is bankroll. We don't know the exact prize pool because we don't know who all is going to show up yet, but I'm projecting that we're going to be about 100 people. So I think we're going to be looking at about 7 NHC spots, over 40,000 in cash. It's going to be a pretty significant prize pool, and it's going to be a fun couple days of racing out at Santa Anita. So contact Nate Newby if you want to buy in directly. You can also buy in right from the Santa Anita website. Then we've got action in the DRF world. We've got another one of the round one BC qualify events on Saturday. Finish in the top 10%, and you win your way to the round two event at the end of the month, where up to 8 people will win $10,000 buy-ins to the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. And then on Sunday, the latest event on the NHC Tour on nhcqualify.com, $165 buy-in, up to 5 players will win their way to the NHC to come hang out with us at Treasure Island in Las Vegas next January. Other news from the tournament world, I wrote about this on the DRF website yesterday. It's probably in the paper publishing today. Paul Sherman, the news in the tournament world. For the 14th consecutive year, the man has qualified for the NHC. Nice achievement. He will be a guest on the podcast on Friday. So you'll want to tune in for that and hear what Paul has to say about his 14th consecutive NHC qualification.
Fantastic. Wow. We're going to, just based on time, we're going to go a little bit longer than the initial plan, 45, I think, but we're going to call an audible real quick.
Sure, please.
Just on the fly. I want to knock out the other 3 PH races because I think the 3-year-old preps are much more important.
Yeah, let's talk about those real fast.
China Doll, Singing Kitty wins, the big favorite, Curlin's Fox. She ran well.
She did ran okay.
Yeah. I still think going forward, she's a nice one. And
She's the best horse in that race.
Yeah.
When I talk about the horse you want to own, she's the one
that's
you want to own.
That's her, right.
Race.
Yeah. I can't wait for Angle Finder because watching that race did make me wonder how horses just in general do going 6.5, like in aggregate, how horses do going 6.5 to a mile. Because I thought that training move seemed to hurt Curlin's Fox. I thought she was pulling early. didn't really seem super comfortable on the stretch out. I wonder if that's very common. Certainly notable, Mike, and I don't want to steal your thunder because you pointed this out, that Singing Kitty was the one who'd had the good two-turn efforts before.
Well, with the scratch of – I mean, most of that field was stretching out from 6.5. The exceptions to that rule were, there was one, and I can't remember the name of it, but the one coming from Golden Gate that had won at a mile on the turf. There was Lutine Bell, who was a late scratch, who had won one of the stakes down at Santa Anita going long on the turf. But the only other one that had won going long on the turf was Singing Kitty. And, you know, so when you look at it about, you know, horses trying something new, and you're getting a price on one that's already proven at the distance and on the surface, you know, it's easy to redboard after the fact. But she especially the way the betting was going, Curlin's Fox was completely hammered. A bet against.
Yeah. Singing Kitty was the key in both the DRF Qualify and BC Qualify contest last Saturday. Ken Jordan, who's been a guest on the pod, had her and gave the case for her in the piece that I wrote that went up last Monday.
Florida Oaks, Quality Rock, she wins down at Tampa Bay. I don't have much to say about the race. Dan and I were less than impressed with the whole field.
Yeah, I mean, you know, those were the two I was looking at. I got it wrong. I had thought Consumer Credit had run much better than Quality Rocks in the previous race. I'm not sure I'm right or wrong about that, but in any case, Quality Rocks got the better trip, got the job done. Don't have much to add.
I just think it's a so-so group of three-year-old grass fillies right now.
Wait until Lady Eli shows up.
Well, until Lady Eli shows up. We'll see if she does. But, I mean, I thought I just think they're all kind of pedestrian at this point.
Yeah, nothing that's going to have her quaking in her stomach.
No, not at all. Kilrow Mile, Ring Weekend wins for Grand Motion.
Great training job. Another example of a horse, to me, in the hands of a patient, terrific trainer, blossoming from 3 to 4. First grade one win for Drayden Van Dyke,
right? That's right.
Yes, yeah. That's correct. I mean, it was a good performance, but again.
I think I guilted him into changing his Twitter bio after the race, too.
What had it said?
It had said apprentice jockey.
Oh, yeah, that's dated.
Right. So I said, I think it's time to update, you know, maybe grade one winning jockey. So
My only thought with that is it's a grade one in name. I didn't think it was a grade one field.
I can't really argue too much about that.
We've talked on the podcast about how, especially without, you know, main sequence going longer, you know, and obviously not running in Southern California, and Wise Dan at the flat mile on the turf, aside from that, the older male turf grade one level races, I mean, they're wide open. You know,
yeah, it's horses like Long on Value and Ring Weekend. Yeah. These horses are just turned four. Why can't they be players in that division the way it stands?
Yeah,
and we'll get into another one shortly that I think could just absolutely romp in that division, but that'll be shortly. Let's go to the three-year-old preps. These are the Derby preps that everyone cares about right now this time of year. They're all worth a lot of points. The last of the public handicapper races is one of them. It was the Tampa Bay Derby. Carpe Diem wins. My Johnny B. Good is done, clearly. So my, you know, Derby lists, again, why are you even looking at it now?
Come on, man.
All in all, we talked about it a little bit on DRF Live afterward. I think Carpe Diem ran well. I think he did what he was supposed to do. I have serious doubts about anybody else in that field. I don't think anybody else really all that good.
I thought Carpe Diem was going to win going in, and, you know, I like his chances going forward coming out of it. I'm happy that I've had him, been tracking him on my top five list, and he did certainly nothing to get off of it.
I would agree. I mean, I think he's obviously the best horse in that field. You know, I had been following Divining Rod for a while. I still think he could be a good one. I mean, I don't know if the best surface for him is dirt or turf. From the pedigree standpoint, it seems to be turf. But his best races have been run on dirt. And he's got a couple quarter cracks he's been dealing with, which is why the bar shoe came on. So hopefully two bar shoes, right. Two quarter cracks, I think, both in the front.
Yeah. Believe so.
So I'm hoping, you know, they do right by the horse and they get him right. I think he could still be a good one. I you know, boy.
You're not thinking Derby, though.
I don't know. I mean, and I got to imagine that the Jacksons are the one calling the shots with this. And, you know, maybe they want another Derby horse. But, well, I just hope they get him right wherever he shows up next.
The bomb of that race, without question, was Ocean Knight. Yeah. I mean, that was a disaster.
Yeah.
And where do you go now with this horse? Do you give him a chance to redeem himself? Because he doesn't have any points, because Sam F. Davis was not a points race. So do you try to run him back in the bluegrass I mean, he's shown that he's capable of putting up big numbers, but I mean it was just a disaster all around.
It was bad. I saw no excuse. Back to the drawing board there.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do with him, because I don't know.
You know, and I got to imagine Kieran's been scratching his head with a lot of his runners lately. You know, he had Wisecracker, who was everybody's, not just
I thought Wisecracker ran well.
Well, sure, but he didn't run. I mean, before that, people were talking even Derby possibly for him. You know,
I still think it was a maiden special way to Gulfstream. I still think that's not out of the question.
Oh no.
Unbridled Juan just stepped up
for sure.
So I'm not going to hold that against. Yeah. I think Wisecracker.
Wisecracker's back the one that ran later. Second to Kozon in both of their debuts back in January, and then he came back on Saturday and was in a 12 horse field, was like 3-5 and ran all right, but.
Perhaps better examples to suit the point you were making, though, Imperia,
Frosted, sure.
And the filly that ran that same day.
And even Classy Class, who we'll talk about in a second.
Maybe this one?
We're taking a look in Formulator again. I like Formulator. I think it was the fourth.
I want to guess it was the seventh. I think it was the race after the Swale.
Very good guess. So we have Unbridled One, if you can hear me. Unbridled One won by 7. Wisecracker was 10 clear at third.
Yeah.
I'm going to see what the buyer was.
Yeah, I mean, he ran fine, but people were talking about him as being perhaps as big a star as Kozak.
He got an 85 buyer. I mean, it's not like he ran a clunker.
No.
You know, Unbridled One just ran off the page first-time Lasix
for
a very underrated trainer in Gustavo Delgado.
Yeah, well, he's a Stronach horse, too. I mean, he's a really well-bred horse.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I don't have the PPs in front of me or anything like that, but I want to think that the Dam was a graded stakes winner of Unbridled One. I'll tweet that out.
I can't remember. Who was the Sugar Swirl? Yeah, it was the Sugar Swirl baby.
Yeah. She was a good one.
I thought it was. So, that all in all, I mean, Carpe Diem, Dan brought up a good point that, you know what, this was good, but you're going to have to get something. He's going to need a bit of a harder race, don't you think? I mean, I don't think he took a deep breath. He galloped out like a freight train here. You kind of want to see him have to work a little bit next time out.
I don't disagree, but it's always a fine line, and we've seen this, especially with the Pletcher training program. It seems like a fine line between that effort you want for seasoning and something that might get a little too much to the bottom. But I think we can all agree with the idea that a tougher test than that is probably coming his way anyway.
I would imagine the Bluegrass is going to be his final prep going up against some better horses.
Is that where they said they're going with him?
That seems to be a lot of the consent. I don't know if there's anything confirmed with that, but the fact that he's won at Keeneland before over the dirt and all that kind of stuff, I assume that's where he's going.
I just wonder, with Kozon being out now, if he maybe goes for the Florida Derby. Who knows?
Well, Todd's got a hand. I mean, he's already got – it's a knockout down there. I assume Materiality is going to go now. You take out Kozon, you put Materiality in.
Materiality, impressive maiden winner.
Very impressive on Friday.
Friday. It was a maiden or it was an allowance?
Allowance.
It was a stakes, actually.
Well, yeah, that's right. It was an overnight.
$60,000
stakes. Oh, okay.
Overnight.
So two wins now,
got a 104 buyer.
Yeah, including a big fat buyer.
So he is one of the horses that has the highest buyers as a three-year-old thus far.
And, and with Kozon out.
And his was achieved going 9 furlongs. Another thing that makes him – and he galloped out very nicely in his – I had said we watched the race here in the office on Friday. I immediately said Travers horse. But then within the hour, Kozon was off and all this other stuff. And now you've got to assume that Materiality is going to be in some sort of a graded stakes race.
And, I think they liked him. He's a half, I believe, if not a full.
My Miss Sophia.
To My Miss Sophia. No, is it My Miss Sophia? Don't Tell Sophia.
Miss Sophia.
My Miss Sophia. Okay.
I don't know who's going to be replacing Kozon in my top five. Certainly a candidate, though. I think I'm leaning to maybe grabbing one who's out on the West Coast in a race we'll be talking about soon.
Let's first we'll stop in New York real quick. The Gotham. El Kabir shows a new dimension, comes from off the pace. I don't want anybody out. Well, I shouldn't say that. There's one horse that's mildly intriguing.
Interesting. Well, my take on the race was I was impressed. Anytime a horse can show a new dimension like that, it's, credit to the people who train the horse. But I did think, unlike Honor Code, who I thought – wasn't necessarily flattered by the total setup and profile. I did feel like looking at the flow numbers that race set up perfectly for El Kabir and had a terrific trip, and despite having such a good trip, didn't produce a number that makes me think Derby, but still nice horse and ran well, not thinking Derby, but that doesn't, you know, that's not an indictment. That doesn't mean a horse isn't very talented just because I don't think they're going to win the Derby.
And then I should rephrase that. I think he's a good horse. I don't think he's not a Derby horse, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
Yeah, I didn't think that your Derby winner was going to be coming out of that race before the race ran, and there was nothing in the race that changed my opinion. You know, he's a nice horse, and he's one I'd love to own, but I won't be betting him in the Derby.
Who are you interested in taking out of that potentially, and are you thinking Derby or just thinking down the line?
I'm thinking Wood. I thought the horse that you liked a little bit, Tiz Shady. I thought that was impressive.
Yeah, that horse
ran
well.
Let's be honest, that was second career start going from 5.5 to 8.5.
Yeah,
it's not easy. Horse got a little short at the end, hung on for second. Nothing wrong with that. I thought that was a good effort.
It was a game effort. No, that horse ran well. I was very pleased.
Credit to Taylor Rice, too. She can get over to the fence ASAP. I mean, she brought that horse right to the rail, and he was on the rail throughout. I thought it was a good run. Something that you could probably build off of.
Yeah, I was thinking Wood long shot, potentially.
Yeah. You know, I don't necessarily think a Derby winner. But for the Wood, you could do worse, I think. Let's get to, in my opinion, the probably the most important prep of the weekend, San Felipe. Dortmund wins. Prospect Park runs second. Bolo runs third. I think everybody else is just an also-ran. I don't think anybody else is. I mean, Lord Nelson, turn him back. He's not a two-turn horse. The Gomper's a one-turn horse. Ocho, Ocho, Ocho. I think you and I, Mike, disagree a little bit. I just don't think he's that good. I don't. And I know they came out and said there was excuses, like bad trip or something. I don't think he's that good.
I've liked him, but I've always thought he's probably better sprinting. You know, I mean, I bet him in his debut. I don't know if I ever played him since then. You know, I think he's a nice little horse, and I don't know if he's going to be – certainly I don't think he's going to be a Derby prospect, but, you know, he could be a good little sprinter.
Dortmund, I need to change my tune a little bit now.
Well, he showed a lot more.
Yes.
You know, and when we talked about this before, you know, I feel like when you were evaluating him harshly, you were seeing a horse that wasn't necessarily improving at the rate you wanted to see or still clearly had some holes. My case for the horse the whole time has been expecting more because of his unique physicality.
Yeah.
And to what I thought was really nice about this effort from him was I thought he showed a lot more mentally. He wasn't pulling. He seemed to respond to commands from the jockey better than he had in previous starts in a way that you're going to need to if you want to wear roses.
I still think, going back and watching the replay, I still think that he's, I don't want to say slow, but I feel like he's spinning his wheels on the turns. And we've gone into that a little bit. It just doesn't seem like he runs that well on the turns.
Is it a lead issue? Does he run better on one lead than the other?
I just think he's because he's a behemoth. The other thing, though, that I think will be interesting,
good word,
over these past couple efforts, and I brought it up to Dan, and he was kind of iffy on the thought of it, but these past two efforts, he's been down inside. I'd love to see what he could do outside of a horse. Now, he's been on the lead these last two times, so.
Yeah, he doesn't vibe to me like, especially this last time, didn't vibe at all to me like need the lead,
no,
vibe
not
to me
at all.
Like just the fastest.
I think you go back to like the Los Al Derby. Not Los Al Derby. Is that what it is?
Futurity.
Thank you. Derby's for 3-year-olds.
Yes, and he was 2 at the time.
He was sitting off of those two that went. It was Mr. Z. And
Firing Line? No.
Firing Line.
Yeah, he was Firing Line.
Was Firing Line on the lead?
Yeah, I think it was those two.
Wasn't that No Problem or one of those?
No, it was Firing, because it was pretty much those three.
Those three all
around. Yeah, they ran around the track.
But he sat off of them on the outside. I think he's – I'd be interested to see if he could sit off, have a target go to his inside. But the fact that he's handy enough, if you want to go, you can go.
It's a nice quality for a Derby horse.
We both thought, because I picked Bolo in our stakes preview, I thought Bolo ran a big race.
Ran great.
I think he's the one going forward. He ran great on dirt. I hope they don't get married to the idea of trying to get him into the Derby. Because Dan and I both are in agreement. I don't know what your thoughts are. I think he could be an absolute monster on the grass. A monster on the grass. Especially in that, when Ring Weekend wins a race like that, I see no reason this horse, come summer at Del Mar, could not be a major, major. I think he can win the three-year-old race. I think he can win the Twilight Derby and all those kind of things. But I think he could be one that, you know, if you want to get a little, how do I want to say it?
Ambitious?
Bold.
Bold?
No reason you couldn't go up against. So I think that horse is a serious grass horse.
There's some really good races for three-year-olds that I'm sure he'd try first, you know, Secretariat and whatnot.
I think I would imagine we're going to see him in the, what's the three-year-old race on Derby Day? The American
Turf.
Is that what it is? I would imagine that's where I think that's where he should show up.
Yeah, it's a tough call. He ran so well, I could see them deciding to give Dirt another try. But as well as he ran, well, there's two things, really. There's plenty of grass horses and synth horses who people don't really talk about this, but I think it's true. They run really well on dirt once.
Okay.
You know? It's not like that effort to me definitively proves he's a dirt horse. It's not like he was like taking kickback and the whole time.
No, he was down to clear the whole time.
Right, right. So like, I think there's still questions to answer. It's a very difficult question for those connections because he ran well enough to try dirt again, but I'm still not sold.
No, I think
I'm kind of with you about, you know, map out a campaign that involves the Secretariat.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, maybe trying. You know, there's a couple other spots that could potentially be nice pickings for three-year-olds only, and then, you know, try Elders Come Breeders Come.
Try the mile. I just think that fits him. I think he could be a really, really nice grass horse.
Now, Mike, I really want your opinion because you've had him as a Derby horse the whole time, haven't you? Hasn't Bolo been on your list?
Bolo was on my list. It's funny, yeah. My first list, I took him off because there was a little bit of time. I mean, I liked him. I think our first list was January 8th. I had him fifth because he'd already won the Eddie Logan. He looked impressive. He looked like a horse that I thought would get the distance that seemed like he wanted to, you know, could improve. The question was the surface. And I know that he worked once or twice in prep for, one of these stakes before. It might have been the one with Firing Line in Dortmund at Santa Anita earlier in the meet. And Carla Gaines pulled the plug on it, saying, you know, I think we're going to stay on turf. And so that's when I dropped him from my list. So I haven't had him on since then. But he's a horse I liked, and, you know, that was the big concern. And back in early January, I also had Dubai Sky listed as number one because I was looking at some of these horses from a value standpoint that might be overlooked, but certainly were quality enough.
What's your gut about Bolo going forward? Where do you think he'll run?
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if they try something like the Spiral, since it is a points race and it is synthetic. And if he runs really well, I could
Spiral's
see him
coming up really quick.
Yeah, well, sure.
You're going to reel him back
know.
In 2 weeks?
I didn't realize it was 2 weeks. I don't think that'll
be. Is it 2 weeks?
It's either the third week or the fourth week. So it's 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So you'd be
I think they'll probably keep him home.
Yeah.
I think it's either the Santa Anita Derby or a turf.
I had thought along your lines all along that's what they should have done with him.
Yeah.
Not run him here.
Right.
Run him in the Spiral against Meta Boss, against Imperia, against all these other ones.
Yeah. I was surprised to see him show up at the San Felipe because it was an about face from what they were talking earlier, which is we're going to keep him on the turf.
Right.
So I don't know if that third place effort is good enough to change their minds. You know, it might have been obviously a little bit of an experiment for them.
She had also come out and said that was strictly the owner's call. That was not her call.
Well, there you go.
Oh, wow. I missed that note. That's a great note.
So
I'm thinking your American Turf plan is sounding, if that's in fact the name of that three-year-old turf race on Derby Day.
Is, right?
I think it is. I think that's becoming more and more likely. Well, it wasn't.
Let me just make sure, but I'm
wasn't so good. If that's an owner pick the spot, I mean, granted, the horse ran great, but that just and in truth, some of the quotes, the trainer quotes from post race, they weren't. It wasn't like necessarily the mind had been changed.
Yeah.
I'm starting to think turf is they're going to go.
Yeah, I would imagine that's the case, and you know, I thought he ran well.
But it wouldn't be nuts to try the Santa Anita Derby either. He ran great, but we got to talk about. We got to talk about another horse that's been on your radar a long time.
Well,
what did you think of Prospect Park?
Well, yeah, I mean, the other two in that race that were in my top five most recently were Dortmund and Prospect Park. Prospect Park I've had number one for quite a while now because I thought, you know, from the beginning I've loved his pedigree. I loved his sister, especially Proposed. Even Silent Size, who won the Santa Anita Oaks. You know, he's by Tappet. I thought the distance would be no problem. I loved his debut. He's just a horse that seems like he's improving at the right time and is going to get better with the longer distances. I thought he ran well. I thought he did everything that you'd want to see. He got second place points. You know, I frankly wish he was a little bit further back. I wish Dortmund had won by 8. Because I think maybe people are starting to pay too much attention to him and the price might go down.
I could certainly see sneaking him into my top 5. But at the same time, I thought there was no question that Dortmund was like way, way, way more impressive.
Yeah. Well, for sure. Here's the thing I liked about Prospect. I mean, Dortmund was certainly the best in that race. He may be best Derby Day even. The thing I liked about Prospect Park's run was he looked all goofy down the stretch. He was looking up almost into the grandstand. He was running with his head cocked. He didn't seem, I don't know if he was pulling or green, or he certainly seemed like he had some issues to iron out, which I kind of like, because if he ran second and it was as most professional as he could possibly be, where do you go from there? So it showed me that he can run well. He closed well late to just nose out Bolo for second. And if you know, I'm sure they're going to work on him. Maybe if he shows up a little bit more professionally, you know, and I'm hoping he runs third in the Santa Anita Derby, well beaten. And people go into the Derby thinking, oh, he's been beaten twice by Dortmund. You know, you've got these other horses that are coming. Carpe Diem maybe runs the table. American Pharoah runs the table. Hoping he gets a little overlooked on Derby Day, and I get 25-1.
I thought he was good. I think it could be a combination of things, but that was my fear the first time out. I say the first time, last time when he won as impressively as he did, when he was in behind horses, he wasn't settled. He was much more settled this time, so maybe it is just maturing and he's green. I don't think he likes the kickback. I think that's why, but like
that's
you had said.
That's what that stuff he's doing is about.
Well, but you had said it too, though. I mean, he was doing that.
He did it when he was clear.
Even so. When he was in the clear, but I just still feel like, I almost wonder if he just resents getting rocks kicked in his face.
It's possible.
Can't really blame him.
You know, no, not at all. I can't blame him at all. But
I'd be a turf horse for sure. I thought he was very good.
I'm afraid he ran too well, and that now he's on too many people's lists. Because what I was hoping for was a really well-beaten second. He gets enough points that they're still thinking.
You're too far down some sort of weird wise guy rabbit hole now.
But here's the thing.
I was going to say, as far as your talk
is Dortmund, really.
I think there's a fair chance that now people are looking at this horse saying, oh, going forward.
Yeah.
You know, all right, yeah, now this is the one that you want.
Yeah, he's caught some people's attention. And I was hoping he makes the Derby field. You've got Dortmund who runs the table and comes in undefeated. You've got American Pharoah who runs the table in the Oaklawn route and comes in, you know, aside from his maiden debut, undefeated. You've got somebody like Carpe Diem who runs the table. You know, I think this might be a year where you actually get horses at more than 50-1 for the first time in a long time, because you're going to get some that are going to get bet hard. And I was hoping you get, even if Texas Red makes the gate, Kent DeSormo rides that one, you've got, you know, Cliff Sice and maybe, I don't know, Martin Pedroza or somebody like that. I mean, you know, he could be 25-30-1. That was my hope.
I think that's on the table.
Coming out of it, though, I have to finally tip the cap, because he did. He beat, I think, better horses this time, and maybe, you know what, maybe Firing Line is really, really good. I was impressed.
He's starting out too. It was a great gallop out.
And he's starting to, like you said, he was much more mentally sharp in that day on Saturday. If he's starting to put it all together, and that's the only thing. And I know Dan brought that up yesterday when we were just kind of chopping it up a little bit, that if, let's say, Prospect Park is a little bit green and he's still figuring things out, Dortmund still seems a little goofy too, running in spots a little bit. That, you know, if there is a forward move from Prospect Park, which is entirely possible, there's conceivably a forward move for Dortmund. And I'm a big believer in pairing up buyer speed figures. He has gone back-to-back 104s. Generally, I look at that saying that there's a forward move coming. I mean, if he moves forward off of back-to-back 104s, this is already – I know California Chrome went a 108 in Santa Anita Derby, 107 in this race last year. San Felipe?
Yep.
He got a 90-something in the Derby, 97 maybe, something like that. This is a horse that I look – I'm starting to drink the Kool-Aid a little bit.
Top five, in other words, putting in your top five?
Well, again, my top five doesn't really mean anything at this point.
Gotcha.
Just because it's been a disaster. But now I can finally – the best part – the best thing that happened to me Saturday was that that horse got dump trucked down at Tampa Bay, because now I can look at this thing as objectively as it gets. I don't have to look at
no
it.
Live
I don't
bets.
Have any rooting interest.
Yeah.
I can go through and just look at the race for what it is. And now I finally have to – I have to acknowledge that I think that this horse is
– but
he's good.
But yeah. – We'll go back to the Tampa Bay horse just for a second. What did you think about what came out after the race, which was that they had been considering the UAE Derby for
I really don't want to say because I'm afraid that someone's going to hear and they're going to get angry and come yell at me. We'll just say I thought it was ridiculous. Why on earth?
I can imagine a world where
Dan sent me the text Sunday morning.
Yeah.
He goes – Owen Hardy came out and said that they were going to send him to UAE Derby.
A world where my Johnny B. Good wins at like 27-1 or whatever he was.
It's 30-1, I think.
And Matt Bernier is jumping up and down going, oh, my God, my Derby future. And then you hear, oh, but he's going to ship to UAE,
run in Dubai, and then ship back
for the Derby.
I would have gotten a hold of some people, and I've tried to get in touch with Owen Hardy down in Tampa Bay and say, no. Kentucky, send him to Lexington, not to Dubai.
Anyway, sorry about that side note. I just had to. But, yeah, back to Dortmund. He's starting to remind me a little bit of his dad.
This was the first time that I looked at him and said, ooh.
He's starting to remind me with that positional speed.
I love that, though. That was major to me because, like you both had said, he didn't – when he was out there, he had his ears pricked throughout. Like, this didn't look like a horse that had to be on the lead. He was relaxed, just doing his own thing. He's so big, and even if he does have some issues taking the turns, let's say he's a little slow on the turns, he's going to have the longest stretch in North America. So if he is sitting second or third or fourth at the top of the lane, it could be over. And Dan had brought that up when we were watching the race. We're on the far turn. I thought Bolo had him. I thought Bolo was going to win. Dan thinks, and I think this could be entirely accurate, and we can talk to him a little bit on Friday about it. If you're going to beat him, you got to get him on the turn. You got to put him away on the turn because he doesn't seem to have the same kind of cruising speed on the turn as he does. Boy, when he gets on the straight, he motors. So
yeah, no, it was the stretch run, including the gallop out, were impressive.
I was very impressed. Those were the Derby preps. This weekend we've got the Rebel. That's the big one. American Pharoah's back.
Well, the vibes coming out of the camp on this horse
are that
super duper positive. It's surprising, right?
I mean, he essentially ran a race the other day from the gate going six. It was like 110-1, 110-2.
Yeah, that's racehorse time.
That's blistering.
Yeah.
For a workout. I'm still not convinced that he wants to go far. He may be brilliant, though. He's your champion two-year-old.
I'm not jumping on the bandwagon just yet, but I'm surprised at how positive all the vibes are. I figured we'd be hearing some equivocating and, we'll see what happens kind of talk. And all the talk is... Baffert sees him and Dortmund as 1 and 1A.
Could you imagine Baffert going into the Derby having the first and second choices?
It's happened before, and it could happen again.
Yeah.
I think it's happened before, Point Given, Congaree. I don't know where that flash in my mind came from.
They had to be
first. They had to be both among the first three choices.
And it's Monarcos.
I bet Monarcos for
there you go.
Right. Some bad red boarding from 15 years ago.
Going way back. All right, so we went a little bit longer today, but no big deal. We felt like we had to get it all in. Pete, enjoy your time out in California.
Thank you, gentlemen. Give me a holler if I can do anything for you out there at the Great Race Place.
Beautiful. Mike, we will be back here on Friday. We'll have Dan Ellman in with us, and we'll go over the public handicap races, you and I again. Well, it was Pete and I last week. This week it'll be you and I doing the PH races. Sure. We'll talk about the Rebel. Talk about all the other good stuff happening down there, and we'll get some thoughts from Dan. So thanks for listening. Again, DRF Live now. We're going daily Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, 12:30 start. Friday is TBD, but everything else looks like 12:30. Give it a look. We'll be doing this after we get done here. Dan and I will be back in here in the studio tomorrow. If you're listening to this tonight, 12:30 Thursday, we'll look at some races. We'll get going. So thanks for listening. Pete, take it away.
May you win all your photos.